We're here with Miriam Wallach from the Nachum Segal Show. I'm really excited because you are certainly the expert at doing interviews, and it's sort of interesting being on the other side of and interviewing you. I don't know how you feel in terms of being interviewed.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it. I would say that I work for the master of interviewing. I may be a good student after so many years. But it's funny, being on this side of the mic, working at the network, and now not being a host, so to speak, but being the interviewee is certainly a role I am not used to taking. That is for sure.
Well, so far, so good.
Exactly.
How did you get into this radio business? I know when we were walking into the office, you were talking about having taught. So right. I'm curious about that journey.
So that is a great question. I was a classroom teacher for 15 years. I have a master's in English and a second master's in education. And I loved teaching English for many, many years. And then literally sort of tripped and fell in a hole and ended up in radio is what I tell people. It was like a huge pothole and I sort of fell into it. What had happened was I started writing a column for Mayor Fertig, who used to be at the OU and now works at Shari Tzedek. But even before that, Mayer was the editor of the Jewish Star in Long Island, and I wrote a column for Mayer. And he was always a sub.
This is while you were teaching?
Yes. So this is a while ago at this point, because I've been working at the Nachum Segal Network for 6 years at this point, wow, which feels like an eternity, a good eternity. So when I was writing a column for Mayer was also a sub for JM and the AM, which is Nachum's flagship program. And he had decided that as part of his work at the Jewish Star, he wanted to do a weekly show for Nachum based on what we were doing at the Jewish Star.
So basically the Jewish Star live.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. So he had asked me to co-host. We were very good friends. We have good rapport. We have good banter. So we started that way. Time goes by and Mayer moves to Yeshiva University and starts working there, no longer has time basically to work on our show together. And as such, the idea was presented that I should take over the show by myself, which was absolutely daunting and tremendous and a huge mountain that I had no idea what I was going to do. And I was terrified. And so.
And at this point, you don't really have, aside from this show,
zero experience whatsoever. That is correct.
Not to highlight I'm just in terms of the evolving story.
100%. It was literally, that's why I say I fell into a pit. So it's a little trial by.
I would say more like Alice in Wonderland, sort of.
It
like,
depends on the way you look at it. Yeah. It's trial by fire at the Nachum Segal Network as you start as a host and you work with Nachum Segal, who very much believes in letting a host work it out a little bit by themselves until they find their groove. And only after a couple of shows did I get any feedback. And Nachum was in the room, in the studio the entire time. Right. A little daunting.
Oh, my.
Yes. So you have the master of radio sitting there. You have never done a show on your own by yourself ever. You've only worked.
Who was your first guest?
I couldn't even tell you. By myself, I don't even know, but I'm sure that person has like permanent scarring or something. I was horrible. But then time evolved and Nachum and I continued to work and I continued to teach. So I did this show.
You were doing this while teaching?
Yeah, I started doing the show a week while I was still teaching. I would come to the Lower East Side and do a show. And then Nachum and I started working on individual projects together, continued to evolve. And finally, I was at a crossroads in my career as a teacher. And I was being courted by another institution to be hired. And that when that position fell through, I was at a Yankee game when I found out I wasn't getting that other job. And I texted Nachum at that moment. I wrote to him, if ever there was a time for you to figure out how to hire me full time, the time is now. And we met the next morning. And that was it. And I left education. And started working for Nachum.
And never graded a test ever again.
Never sat in a parent-teacher conference for the rest of my life. People used to ask me, after a while, so do you miss teaching? I'd be like, I do not miss the parents. That was always my answer.
And I do not miss the grading.
Oh, it's tedious. It's tedious.
And here you have a wide, you're reaching people. Obviously, it's different in the sense that it's not students. here you sort of know that your listeners are listening.
Yes. Well, you know that your listeners are listening in the Jewish community when they're angry with you. You don't necessarily hear, hey, that was great. Thanks so much. Oh, this was wonderful. Now, truth be told, today is Yom HaTzmaut, and we did 7 hours straight of programming on the air with a phenomenal, yes, it's been a long
and
day.
And you're here.
And I'm here.
Oh,
and I'm
my.
Thankful to be here. I
wow.
really am.
Thank you.
No, not at all. It's really an absolute pleasure.
So what was the highlight of today's programming?
Oh, that's a great question. For me, there's one answer, which is having Ambassador Michael Oren call in. I'm an enormous Michael Oren fan, and I'm not embarrassed to say I'm a huge fangirl.
I heard him at the Philadelphia Public Library, and that was incredible.
It's amazing. He's amazing. There are so many modern Jewish heroes that are walking amongst us. So when he calls in on Yom HaTzmaut,
You knew he was calling in?
Yeah, we scheduled the interview. So when he called in from the Namal, from the port in Tel Aviv, surrounded by all these lone soldiers who were part of a Yom HaTzmaut program, and he is surrounded by them, and you can hear him booming and beaming, and he's like so in his element.
That energy just carries over into the interview. That's incredible.
That is the highlight of my Yom HaTzmaut.
Wow.
You can't top that, even though we had phenomenal interviews today, and one after another, and we have a close supporter of the Nachum Segal Network join us on the air who was crying while he was watching the air show. He is in Jerusalem, and he is crying, and he is so moved by the, as he said, by the numerous languages being spoken around him in Jerusalem, the kibbutz galiot that is happening before our eyes. He is crying on the air. And so you
That's powerful.
So I feel very incredibly privileged to be working at the Nachum Segal Network and to help Nachum's mission come to fruition. And these days like these are the embodiment of that, honestly.
How was it entering sort of the radio world as a woman and as a frum woman?
Yes. So there are few of us, otherwise known as none of us. There's just me. Nachum and I would go to meetings, especially during the first year when I would accompany him to a variety of meetings and we would meet members of the music industry and different people who represent other talents. And then we would go to this sponsor and we go to that person, and they are not used to a woman being there, and they're certainly not used to me. And I am, as I like
well,
to say...
Well, you're like a full personality.
I'm a little bit like a full-bodied wine. You're either going to love it or you're not going to love it. So it took some time. It really took a lot of time for people to get used to me and to realize I'm not going anywhere and that I'm also not shy. And I'm not kidding. And I take certain things, right, I take certain things very seriously. I won't work professionally with people I don't feel respect Nachum and what he's trying to do. And as such, if I feel that somebody has disrespected Nachum, that is not a list that anybody wants to be on. But it has been part of my work to earn their respect and to make sure to represent Nachum appropriately, because not only am I the general manager of the Nachum Segal Network, but I'm also Nachum's manager. So when I am negotiating something on his behalf, or I'm negotiating something on behalf of the network, I will do whatever I need to for a client, but I will also make sure that that the integrity of what we're doing is maintained, that the professionalism is maintained, and that respect is shown as well.
Tell me about that mission. What is that mission? What is Nachum trying? What are you both trying to accomplish? And it sounds like, you know, this was Nachum's vision that you're buying into, and
JM and the AM.
I grew up on that.
You
that
did.
Was every morning. That was every single morning.
Yeah.
I woke up, that went on, and I just...
You commuted from where to where. That's always what we hear.
Right. It wasn't even I did commute in high school from Queens to Brooklyn, but I'm not even sure if it was that. It was more like in my room. Like he was in a wonderful way.
Right. Don't worry, we hear it. Right. Yeah, that's fine.
He was very much in my space.
Right.
And was... And he fills a room.
Yes.
And the Rabbi Goldwasser, you know, and when I was asked to interview when I first took this position here at the OU, first of all, I was like starstruck, and I came, he thought I was interviewing by phone. I didn't understand that. So I showed up at the, you know, ringing the bell at the Lower East Side, you know, building, and he, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope I'm in the right place. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning, and I slept over so that I can be there. And he comes downstairs and he like looks at me and sort of didn't have a plate, like, where, like, who's this person and where, you know, what's she doing here? But he was extremely gracious and brought me upstairs, and I am just sitting there and in awe. I cannot believe this. Just take it in. Just absorb, just observe, absorb, and just like, whoa. And I would imagine a lot of people feel that way. But I'm curious to hear on your end, like, what is it that he's trying to do? And I think by articulating that, hopefully that'll help us appreciate and help him accomplish what he's trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. You should just know, by the way, I refer to the studio as the Smithsonian of Jewish Broadcasting, because it's 35 years of Nahum all over the walls. And
literally, I saw it. I'm telling you, Miriam is not exaggerating.
No, I'm not. And people who walk in there are overwhelmed. And the first time I walked in there, first of all, the walls were not as full. It's been another 6 years, and we have done crazy things and unbelievable things that have now adorned the walls.
And mind you, there are also tapes. Tapes everywhere, piles and piles of tapes and CDs and pictures and articles. And it's all consuming. It's just surround sound.
Right. 100%. That's a great way to describe it. People, some people explain, they're like, it looks like a garage. It looks like his garage. I'm like, it's not his garage. It's his man cave. And he invites you into it every single day. You are a part of his world. That is his world. It is his history that fills that room. And so when people, you know, we've been encouraged to update the space. We have been encouraged to move locations. We have been encouraged rather fervently to clean up. And I'm like, why? This is his world, and he is inviting his listenership into his world every single day. I don't want a stoic room.
And I think it's actually that's a great way to put it, because we're inviting him into our world,
right?
So I think that what a like incredible synergy and dynamic of that, you know, each
and an intimacy
of space,
right? And people, and I think that that's one of the things that makes Nahum great, is that he allows people to enter his world, and he in turn has entered theirs, and everyone feels a connection to him. But my favorite phrases is, I'm a good friend of Nahum's. Okay, I've worked for him for 6 years. I've never heard your name before in my life, but that's okay. That's okay.
Don't tell them.
but that to me is part of the greatness of what the Nahum Segal Network is and what JM and the AM is that he is everyone's good friend. And it doesn't matter what background you come from. It doesn't matter what part of Brooklyn you live in. It just doesn't matter.
He doesn't take party. You don't get that sense that there's a party law, that there's allegiance.
Except for Israel.
Yes. And except in a wonderful way.
But 100%.
In fact, and he's pulling the rest of the community with him. And
as
maybe,
we hope.
Right. And maybe parts of the community that wouldn't be as so aligned or so expressive.
Right. And I can say that on a day like today, on Yom HaTzmaut, where we are only playing Israeli music from the 70s, and we're playing Poogie, and we're playing Naomi Shemer, and we're playing other things, because that's what you want on Yom HaTzmaut. Not one complaint. And that to me,
that speaks volumes.
Correct. Because first of all, it's gutsy to do something like that in the first place.
But he has the community's trust.
Right. And that's because there's that intimacy. He has built a relationship. He has built a relationship with his listeners that is above and beyond what other people have. There are plenty of radio hosts out there, but Nahum is not a radio host. Nahum is a community leader. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And that's part of his mission, to use music and the airways to unite the Jewish community. And it was based on that he developed what we call the Jewish Unity Initiative, which is going to various locations on the globe and bringing Jewish music and unity to that community in need. We've done it in Paris. We did it in Venice. We've gone to Houston after the flood. We've gone to Houston, unfortunately,
so this is
twice.
after once devastating
we,
events.
Correct. Unfortunately. But Venice was not. The funny thing about Venice, we went to Venice on the 500th anniversary of the establishment of the ghetto. And we were committed to bringing the story of the ghetto to the rest of the world. How many people are going to get to the Jewish ghetto in Venice? Not too many.
Right.
And as such, there's a part of our history as the Jewish people that needs to be told. And it's located in that square. And so we went and we broadcast from there. And then Motzei Shabbos, or Motzei Shabbat, as the case may be, we had a concert, a Jewish music concert, free. And that's also part of the Jewish Unity Initiative, is that we host a free Jewish music concert for the community, because nothing brings people together like song. And so we sit there and we sing and we cry, because it doesn't matter that we don't speak Italian. Everyone speaks the words of these songs, and we sing together and we dance together.
That's powerful.
It's an incredible thing. And it works every single time. The biggest doubters, the biggest haters, why are you going there? Why are you doing this? What's the point? What? Come with us and see. Come with us and see. It'll blow your mind.
I would imagine for sure for, let's say, when you said that you were in Houston, that was tremendously impactful.
It was.
It also, it's bringing us to Houston.
Right. So we went after the most recent flooding, right after the, and it's totally in part, and thanks to everyone here at the OU, Alan Fagan, Maish Bain, it was literally a Nasa Venishma. We want you to go. You need to do this. Tell us what you need. And so we did. And he said, book your tickets. Go. And
because obviously they realize what it does for
correct.
A community to see you, Nachum, walk in and bring with you New York City. New York City stands with you in this.
And in this case, we brought with us Mordechai Shapiro. And so after a day and a half of broadcasting and sleeping wherever, because everyone was, you know,
displaced.
Exactly. And thrown out of their homes. And we walked amongst the garbage and the wreckage and places we had just been a couple of years ago. We were now back, and the shuls that we had stood in were devastated, and we're watching everything get dried out and all of these crews.
I'm happy, by the way, that you're talking about this, because, you know, these, unfortunately, there are these catastrophic events and they sort of fade out. And as you're talking, I'm like, what is going on in Houston today?
They just took down the shul last
week. Is that right?
Rabbi Gelman's shul. Was it last week? I think. Yeah, it was last
week.
Oh, my gosh. They finally took it down, and they're considering either relocating the shul to a different area because it's just
been
flooded
too many. That's so painful.
If you go on Rabbi Barry Gelman's Facebook page and you look at you look at the video and you watch the pictures, it'll break your heart.
Oh,
and
my.
Yoni Pollack, who works with us, is a Houston boy. And he said, my bar mitzvah was in there. And he did a whole tribute on the air on his show to Houston. And it's devastating. And so that's what's happening.
Yeah, so you were saying,
Houston
but
now.
I interrupted you. You were saying.
So we go to Houston and we bring Mordechai Shapiro, and he does a concert for all these kids who are displaced, who haven't been to school, who watch their stuffed animals float away, whole thing. And they're dancing like mad. They're dancing like mad.
And what an outlet.
Oh, my gosh. And then all of a sudden, and the music was very loud that night. And somebody passed Nachum a note, and it said, this is what we needed. And we brought it back. It's hanging on the wall of the studio.
I was going to say, you have to have it added to the wall.
We have it. We have it. And there's so many pieces of that give us chizuk. We're giving them chizuk by bringing them this music and allowing them to just take a break from life for a second. And they're giving us chizuk, saying, I'm sure it was hard to get down here. And I was sure it's hard to get the money for it. And I'm sure, whatever. But look what you're doing for us. Keep doing it. And it just, it allows us to move forward. And it allows us to be reminded and to take our own beat, to take our own breath and say, okay, what's next? And often that's hard because you're so overwhelmed by the magnitude of whatever project you've just completed, you can't see beyond it. But it reminds us that we have to. And that's also part of the mission, is that no matter what, we can have to continue moving forward. That we are serving a need in the community. Initially, it was about It was about filling a void where people wanted quality family content that they can listen to with their families. And at a professional level and at a quality which you don't necessarily find in the Jewish community. Okay, we've done that. And we continue to do that. But what's next? What's next is serving as a unifier. And so when we get emails from people in the craziest of places, and when we get notifications from iTunes that people in Afghanistan have downloaded our app, and we are like, wow, what mashgiach is in Afghanistan? I mean, who else is listening to us? But we get these notifications, and it's amazing. And when we have heads of state and dignitaries and lay leaders and community leaders and people with voices who can't wait to come on the air and who know that it is imperative for their institution or their organization to get on the air with Nahum because there's a community out there that only he reaches. His brother joked years ago that he is the rabbi of the biggest congregation in the world. Nahum Siegel is not a rabbi, but he has the greatest following. And people heed the call. When we do shows from Houston and people hear us, I get phone calls, I get emails. Can I send machzorim? Can I send this?
People respond to
correct
him.
Because they're with us, because it goes back to that intimacy.
And the trust.
100%.
And that when through years of relationship.
Exactly. When we go to Israel for Yom Yerushalayim 50 and broadcast from the rooftop of Aish and overlook Har HaBayit, which will forever be
I'm getting goosebumps.
And I was there, and it's still just ingrained in my mind like it was yesterday. And people respond with, I felt like I was there. Great, then we did it. What's next?
So what is next?
What's next? We are, we continue to.
And you could say in the next few weeks or days, what's coming up? So it doesn't have to be big picture. It can be just.
No, well, today was a big day, Yom HaTzmaut, and making sure that this show was mat'im, was appropriate for the magnitude of the 70th.
How much work what goes into planning this? Take us behind the scenes.
Okay, so behind the scenes, that's a great question. So behind the scenes, we were supposed to be in Israel this week. And God, as we like to say at the Nahum Siegel Network, God is the ultimate producer. So it does not matter what you have planned. God will direct you. He is the ultimate producer. So what happened? We were supposed to be brought to Israel for Yom HaTzmaut with a particular organization that ended up canceling their mission. And as a result, we were no longer going with them. But what happens in the end? My husband's grandfather passes away.
No, so hard. Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. He and my husband then has to go to Florida to help manage the Shiva house where Shiva is taking place. And I would not have been able to leave New York.
Someone in our neighborhood had a wonderful phrase, poignant to me, divinely choreographed.
Ooh.
It's a good one.
Nice.
Right?
Yes.
I use it all the time now.
That's it. Correct. So if we were supposed to be in Israel this week and I have six kids and my husband was in Florida, that was going to take some serious choreographing. So God took it out of our plans. And initially it was like, what do you mean we're not going to be in Israel for Israel 70? Of course we are. But I said to Nahum today, first of all, just again, logistically, I don't know how it would have worked.
Because this afforded you to be in many places at the same time.
Correct. And if I was in Israel, I was in Israel. And if this programming from Israel was still taking place and I had to be in New York with my family, I do not know what this would have looked like. So what happened? God took it out of the picture. He solved the problem for us without us knowing. We figured it out in the end. But that's it. So instead, we were given a tremendous opportunity, which is to celebrate Yom HaTzmaut from the diaspora and make Jews in the diaspora engaged. And that's huge. And it was not missed on us, and we did not miss the opportunity.
Because then you're here.
Correct.
Meaning, and you're here with everyone else who's here, and it's not, that connection is important. Meaning, you're there, then sort of, I think by you being here facilitates that we're also experiencing. How do you experience this remotely?
Exactly. And right. So.
And you did it for us, with us.
Right. We did it together. Exactly. Right. So we had Yom HaTzmaut here. And that, as diaspora Jewry, is great. and is important because we do not want to lose that connection. This day should not go without it being a massive celebration. And we did not let it go. And we took it very seriously and made sure that a good 2 weeks ago, we started shaping what we wanted this show to look like.
So do you sit down and plan?
Yes. We sat down and plan. We make like basically a wish list of who we would like to have on ideally. And then I start reaching out. So I have a lot of fun contacts on my WhatsApp and I start texting people, you know, can you join us for this? Can you join us for that? And again, it's Yom HaAtzmaut in Israel and people are barbecuing. And I'm not saying that lightly, but they're with their families. They're off.
Right.
This is not a work day where I can find somebody in their office. So, yeah, Ambassador Danny Aiello was supposed to call in today and I, you know, WhatsApped him a couple times. And obviously he was involved in his Yom HaAtzmaut and that's great.
Right.
So kol hakavod to him and chag sameach
to him. You need to be able to also turn on a dime.
Yes. So, and you have to, right, you have to pivot and make sure that there is, and what are we going to do instead? That is a skill as a producer that I was basically taught by Mark Zomick, who produced numerous JM and the AM marathon shows, which were a highlight, which are used to be an annual highlight.
I remember them.
There you go. So that was all Mark Zomick behind the scenes. And there were a couple of times where Mark, towards the end of that era, you know, Mark would give me the reins and I'd be like, well, what do I do? And he guided me. There is nothing that I have learned how to do in this business, to follow up on that other question, that I haven't been well taught by members of the JM and the AM family who precede me. I say all the time, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I am a good student. And so I listened to the smart people because smart people surround themselves with smarter people. And so I listened to the smarter people and they advised me well. That being said, I also joke that the best training I had for this job was having taught 7th and 8th grade boys English because I'm not afraid of anything.
So I taught 7th grade Russian boys Hebrew.
Okay. So you're also not afraid of anything. Right. There's a fearlessness. Right. You talk about being a woman in this industry. There's a fearlessness with which you need to walk into
you
a room.
You cannot put your back to the class. You got to learn how to face the class while writing on the board.
Exactly. You have eyes everywhere. And that becomes it because I know that I can keep an 8th grade classroom of boys quiet. So I can do anything.
Right.
Then I joke about that. And it also, I mean, for me, because Nachum is 6'6", it also helps that I'm 5'8". And I won't go to a meeting in flats. Because there's also that enormity of a woman in 3-inch heels that I use. Why
go
not?
Go for
Why
it.
Why not? What, is somebody going to stop me? So there's, you know, again, there's a comfort in who I am as a person. There's a comfort in that space. But knowing that I can keep a classroom of 8th grade boys quiet.
I love it.
It's just, that's it. So I joke that I taught for 15 years, but it was all the training I needed and all the tutoring that I got.
That's like that phrase, everything I learned in kindergarten.
Yep.
So I think everything you learned in...
I learned by teaching middle school boys. Exactly. Exactly. Who knew? Who knew? So, you know, everything, hashgacha pratis, everything happens for a reason. Everything falls into line.
And when you can see it and reflect on it and appreciate it, it's the greatest gift.
Right. It's amazing to think that my whole life had been charted this way, to see the hand of God, to understand where my husband and my family fit in and how all of that has worked also. You know, the funny or the sort of backstory is that before I started working for Nachum full time, I had interviewed with him 3 years beforehand. 2.5 to 3 years beforehand to have a similar position. And that didn't work out at the time. And Nachum really was not ready for a manager. And so, you know, we basically parted ways. But ironically enough, I then became pregnant with my youngest and had numerous complications afterwards that ended me up in the hospital for a long time. Had I had that job initially, the Nachum Segal Network would have failed. Because I wasn't able to work or to be mobile for months. And so who would have done all that when we just had this fledgling idea?
Divinely choreographed.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, it's a true gift to be able to look back and say, wow, that's why that happened. That's why this works out. You know, I expect to go back to your office after this is over and find out from my daughter if she got the internship she's been hoping for the summer.
Oh, I hope so.
I hope so, too. She's expecting not. But as I say to her, if it's going to be, it's going to be. There's a plan. There's a plan. God's the producer. We're going to figure it out at some point or another. And if you don't, you don't. If you don't get that opportunity to look back and say, ah, that's why that happened, okay.
And you may not have that opportunity for a year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30
Correct.
Years. But when you do, it's a
bulb.
Gift. But also to have that, to be wearing those glasses, mm-hmm. to be looking at the world in that way and looking for those divine winks.
Yeah,
my sister calls it a wink. So it's those are powerful moments
yes.
to capture.
100%. And yeah. they're there. They're there. You got to open your eyes. But everything happens for a reason. When a deal doesn't happen that I'm trying to pitch, when this happens, when this doesn't work out, when you don't go to Israel for Israel 70, okay, there's a bigger picture here. We're going to have to take a step back. We're going to have faith and move on.
Right.
Got to ask ourselves, then what's next?
Powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful. Thank you so much for sharing, Miriam. This was an absolute treat.
Totally my pleasure. I really, first of all, I very much appreciate being included in the cadre of women that you have decided to sit down with. I very much appreciate that. I don't take that role or that honor lightly, and I want you to know that. And I think that your initiative at the OU is tremendous. And I give the OU, as usual, a wonderful, wonderful round of applause for recognizing the needs and opportunities that women really have in the Orthodox community. There's so much out there that could be interpreted as otherwise. But when you have faith and you understand, you know that there are more opportunities than anything else.
Absolutely. A lot to contribute, mm-hmm. a lot of work to be done. Has Yom Katsar, Hamlacha Meruba.
Your own little hasbara over there. Right? Trust me, I get it. I get it. But it's a wonderful initiative. I wish you a tremendous amount of hatzlacha. And thanks for inviting me.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for being here.